good morning, afternoon, or evening, and welcome to the Bloody Disgusting Network. The following show is just horrifying. Beware.
You're obsessed with her, and you're obsessed with her daughter!
All right, easy, Geraldo.
And welcome back to Horror Queers. It's a special Spiral bonus mini-sode, and I'm Joe.
And I'm Trace, and I mean, it's kind of about Spiral. It's more about, well, a prelude to the main event, as Mickey would say from Scream 2.
Dude, you couldn't even come up with a Jigsaw-related S quote?
I wasn't prepared for this. no, everyone, so if you listened to our episode on the faculty from this week, you'll know that our next episode is going to be on James Wan's original film, Saw. And we're going to have some guests on that one, but we're going to do this as a little teaser for it by talking about Saw in advance somehow with one of our friends. And actually, previous guest from our episode on Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood, Mr. Greg Mucci.
Hello, hello.
Welcome back, it's so soon.
thanks for having me for Saw.
Oh, man.
Big fan.
Saw. Yes, so Greg, our relationship, I really felt like I followed you on Twitter for a while, but I didn't get to know you until we started watching all of the Saw films as a little group.
It's been a weekly staple every Sunday night. We started really overzealous because we were doing two Saw films a night, so that took up all of October.
Oh, man.
Which I actually miss watching two movies, not going to lie.
Sometimes I do, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so coming back to the conversation at hand, Greg, tell me about your relationship with Saw, and most specifically this first one.
I mean, I can't really tell you what drew me to the theater. I mean, it had to have been the advertising, obviously, but I can't remember what the commercials or the trailers were like. I'm just assuming based off of that time period, it was very hyperkinetic and sort of music video-esque in its style. Mm-hmm. But I went opening night, so it was Friday, October 29th of 2004.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and it was a packed theater, and I went with my friend, Bruce. I was, at this point, a junior in high school. And, yeah, I didn't really know what to expect. I think along with Blair Witch Project, it was sort of one of those, like, unifying theater experiences where once, like, the veil, the veils opened or parted from our eyes at the end with the twist, I think, you know, it's one of those things where you just hear, like, so many people say, oh, shit, or, you know, like what the fuck, or, like, gasps, you know? And I think Blair Witch Project was that, but almost in reverse, where there were a lot of people who just didn't get it, you know?
Yeah.
It's almost as if, like, they weren't paying attention to the story being told in the movie about the kid's face in the corner. But I remember leaving that theater with Blair Witch Project, like, completely stunned and just, like, in love. And that, I think, helped with my horror love. I really loved it when I saw it, and I was totally taken aback by the twist. And I remember, I think, the following Monday, you know, going to school and some people being like, oh, I saw the twist coming. And, you know, you knew right then and there that person's a fucking liar.
And an idiot and an asshole.
No one needs to brag about that shit. Yeah. I fucking hate that.
Yeah, because I've seen this movie a lot of times, and recently rewatching it, I'm sort of like, okay, you have a doctor and someone who's quote unquote a voyeur who takes photos of people, you know, who are cheating or this and that, and neither of them can tell that this man in the middle was, you know, still warm blooded. So, I don't know. I think to us as audience goers, like, yes, we're able to sort of search the screen more, and we're also not in the immediate, predicament. But no, I thought it was a really great twist. And I mean, I'm assuming everyone who's listening to this knows of the twist.
Spoiler. I mean, again, like, we're doing this to celebrate the release of Spiral, which is the ninth film in this franchise. So hopefully people have seen at least one of these movies.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not ruining anything. And right now, pause, I guess, and go watch the movies, you know, almost 20 years old. But
oh my god.
Yeah, it's...
Greg, do not say stuff like that.
Okay, no, don't pause. Come on back. It's 17
like
20
years old.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think like that collective sort of theater experience is what makes it super memorable, because I really like this movie as sort of a window into like low budget filmmaking, because I think what's sort of endearing about it is that the more you watch it, the more you sort of just see how piecemeal it is, and sort of like, you know, because this, El Mariachi, Evil Dead, Blair Witch Project are like, I think, like the four movies where like you look at them as like representative of low budget independent filmmaking, because I mean this movie cost surprising $1.2 million.
Yeah.
Which if you look at the movie, you know, you're almost like, no fucking way. Like half, like a lot of that has to go to Danny Glover and Cary Elwes. Because it's like, you know, it's a very drab movie.
Well, it may not have been enough money for Cary Elwes, because he was phoning in his performance a bit.
Oh, so crap. We'll have a lot more to say about that.
Just a tease.
I mean, I'll take that, and I'll actually up it, and I think no one's good in this movie.
It's not a film known for its performances, we'll put it that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's influential in terms of style. Mm. Like, you know, when people think about the 2000s, I mean, how often have we talked about the aughts lately? You know, it's the remake boom, it's J-horror, and it's torture porn. Mm. And
this is the one that starts it. This is the one that starts the torture porn, right?
Yes.
Which I don't agree with, you know, and I think one of the things that Leigh Whannell commented on, or like, I love his word choice for it, he calls the torture porn label a champagne problem, because if that's one of your problems with your movies, it's like, you know, sort of fluff, like it doesn't really matter, and it's a great thing really to have be one of the issues, because it means you did something right.
I mean, that's the thing, right? It's credited with like ushering in a wave of torture porn films, but in actuality, compared to everything that came after it, including all of its sequels, any of the Hostels, it's not that gory, and it doesn't really relish in the torture of people, right?
Well, and I think, again, as we'll probably talk about in the full-length episode, and if folks want to revisit our episodes on Hostel Part 1 and Part 2, these films are a reflection of the times. It's not like filmmakers magically woke up and said, hey, I'm going to try to gross people out to such a degree that people will call it torture. It's like, we're responding to real life events, and we're saying, this is the world that we live in. It's sick, and it's dastardly, but... Yeah, I completely agree with both of you. I think Saw is really more of a kind of, I don't know, it's a hallmark of independent cinema. It's a hallmark of like just can-do attitude, where these two friends really wanted to make a fucking cool movie, and they push through all the budgetary limitations to make something that has literally made a cultural impact that has lasted now for almost two decades.
Well, and honestly, I it always makes me laugh when people shit on Saw as a franchise. Because, you know, it's like, oh, it's that torture porn bullshit, whatever. I actually find it very comparable to what the Friday the 13th franchise was doing in the 80s. You know, that's also like super low budget independent cinema. Mm-hmm. And it made a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. You got a new one of those movies every year. Each one was on a fucking tiny ass budget. Yep. And people came out in droves to see it. And that is what we got with Saw. We didn't have a franchise like that. Like, we didn't have that in the 90s, really, with like these like horror franchises and slashers taking off. Jigsaw was that for anyone that was growing up in the aughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and I think to sort of dissuade people from latching onto the torture porn, it's, I mean, for me, torture porn, it's like less about depiction, because you could depict violence, you could depict someone getting their Achilles heel slash, but I think it has to do with emphasis, and like if your camera is sort of cutting to it or lingering on it for a long time, and it's like trying to emphasize the gore, then yes, I think torture, but for a lot of Saw, you don't see it. And it's like, it's super manic editing. Like, it's never really like a focal point. So I think that, I think torture porn is not really a good designation for this movie.
Well, I think you said it really well when you said it was almost like music video, because I can absolutely see the kind of staccato editing that I grew up on it in the 90s, and we were seeing it in a lot of the 2000s level horror. And I know for a lot of folks who were raised on 80s films and even into the 90s, this doesn't resonate with them as well. So I think the torture porn label ended up coming about because folks wanted to shit on, like, oh, these aren't my horror movies anymore.
See, I actually wonder if people think, because I'm vocalizing what I think I've heard about this before, but where something like Friday the 13th, they're like, oh, there's like a low budget charm there. And right. while Saw is low budget, it also feels... I'm going to use the word overproduced because there's just a lot going on here from a filmmaking standpoint. Whereas with Friday the 13th films, there isn't a lot going on there from a filmmaking standpoint.
Yeah. Right. And the thing that I heard that Wan had was due to budgetary constrictions, he could...
Absolutely.
He could only get two shots for the actors. So I attribute a lot of the bad acting... Which is there? I don't think we're seeing anything. But I attribute the bad acting to his limited amount of takes he could have. Because I think Danny Glover has pulled in great performances. Same with Cary Elwes. Who's the wife? Monica Potter. Yeah, she's done good stuff. Same with Michael Emerson from Lost, who plays Zep. Yeah. Like, there's potential there, but it's just like filmed in such a way in which. I guess the only takes that were really captured were some really fucking terrible ones.
It's almost soapy, which I actually think is a really good word to describe, considering the sequels we get and how much they tie. Because the continuity for this franchise is kind of remarkable.
It really is.
I mean, you know, I know people say, "Oh, you can just go, just watch one of them. You don't have to see the rest." No, God,
no, you can absolutely fucking not. And folks, you can listen to like Kill by Kill's Saw's Giving episode last year, where they try to start in the middle, and they have no fucking idea what's going on because the continuity in this is surprisingly good.
Mm-hmm. They watched Saw 4, and I was like, "Why are you going to give him like a mediocre one?" Because to me, Saw 4 is like it's not bad, it's not good, it's just kind of there. Like, give them one that's really good or really bad. I was so puzzled by that vote.
I mean. That was the internet. This is why you cannot trust the internet to provide you with a choice of which film to watch.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, though, the guy who edited it, his name is Kevin Grutert. I really hope that I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes.
He worked on the editorial department for Titanic, and he also edited The Strangers. So I think he is definitely capable of doing more even-paced films.
Well, and he actually went on to direct, I want to say, Saw 5 and 6. Or maybe just Saw 6.
After Bousman?
Yeah, pretty much.
Huh.
Yeah, this film like franchise is very incestuous. With it hires from within.
Yep.
Well, I do wonder then, I mean, because, yeah, those two film titles that you mentioned, Greg, those are remarkably well-done films. Like, no one's going to say, oh, the editing is shit in Titanic and The Strangers. So I do wonder if, again, this all kind of, like, the problems that people have with Saw, specifically the first film, I do think it comes back to there was only so much footage that they could use. So there's only so much movie magic and so many filters that you can apply to hide, you know, how much we're stretching a dollar here.
Well, I mean, yeah, like, I mean, I know we're not getting really into specifics of the film here, but like, again, like just one of those scenes, like in any of the torture, I'm sorry, the trap scenes all use that rapid style editing, you know, when the guy's trapped in the barbed wire, it's like, it's that when the guy's in the room with the flammable liquid shit, like it's him running around the room, rapid editing. And yeah, it's very much to hide that they just can't afford to show a lot of things. The most gore we get in this movie is that one shot of Amanda pulling the intestines out of that man's stomach to find the key. And even then, it's like a 2-second shot.
Contrast that with Dawn of the Dead. Like, we get people pulling parts out of people the whole movie, but nobody calls that torture porn.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that I think at the end of filming, it's like Wan ended up realizing he had, like, not much footage, and he had to do a lot of filler. So it was like with whatever it cuts, like a, you know, security camera footage or a newspaper clipping. It's like them just trying to like stuff this movie so it's longer, which is like I'm looking at these sped up scenes and I'm like, if you just slow that down a bit, you may have a 90-minute movie or whatever you need.
No, for sure.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of what makes it endearing, is like the you could just see him as a filmmaker coming out, and like it's very much his first movie, and I think that's what I like about it from a visual standpoint. I think the script is probably, like, the story is the strongest, and I'd say the script is the weakest.
Yeah, and that's really saying something, though, because Lee Whannell has obviously gone on to become a really good screenwriter.
Yeah.
But as we all know, like, sometimes the first thing you do at the gate isn't going to be the same thing, like the same quality that you're going to do after you get, you know, 20 years of experience.
Yeah, for sure.
And a lot of people who have, you know, cut their teeth working on small films and going to bigger films have talked about how difficult it is to write to a budget, right? Like, they probably didn't know what they were going to be able to get in terms of coverage and how many days with the limited amount of money that they had. So I'd be curious to know. I mean, I think they're both very proud of this film and what has it has accomplished. Like, hey, we're about to go into probably one of the biggest films of the year this weekend with the release of Spiral.
Right.
But I wonder, you know, if they could go back and give themselves an extra, you know, double that budget. What would this film look like? What would they have done differently? I think that'd be fascinating to hear.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I think it'd be fascinating to hear. I don't want to see it because it's one of those things where it's like, oh, well, if you had the chance to go back to high school and like make different decisions, would you do it? And it's like, oh, well, I mean, yeah, I want to, but like, I wouldn't be where I am today if I made different decisions, and I like who I am today, you know?
I don't know. I mean, I think despite all of its potential quote unquote flaws, I actually like all of these little just attempts at making this budget work. Like, I always think of the car driving scenes, you know, the ridiculous fast editing where you're just thinking, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen in terms of somebody just driving through traffic. But for me, this is what Saw is. Like, when I think of my memories from that opening weekend, I think of this kind of thing, and it really helped to develop a sort of visual signature for not just the franchise, but for a lot of films to come for the rest of the decade.
Well, and if you want to talk about, like, yeah, it is influential, but, like, look at all the copycats of torture porn we were getting after this, you know? Like, I mean, if you want bottom-of-the-barrel torture porn besides, you know, Saw 7, look at Captivity with Alicia Cuthbert. That's something that's, like, trying to copy this and doing a very, very poor job of it.
Yeah, I think it's sort of the way that Thora Birch horror movie Train, I think. Sort of,
oh my god.
I think it came sort of on the heels of Hostel, and it was supposed to be that sort of like travel abroad, you're gonna fucking die movie.
Well, because that was supposed to be a Terror Train remake, and then like during production, they changed it because Hostel came out and like did well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that for this, I really love, it's almost like if you have photography, you follow like the rules of three. And I feel like to keep this simple, like Leonel, like he did the rules of twos. It's like you might have one room, but you got two victims, you have a gun and a tape recorder, you have two saws, two detectives, two killers. Mm-hmm. You have two big names, I think, drew it, which was Danny Glover and once you get those two, it's like you could scatter it with sort of no names, and I'm not saying Monica Parr is a no name.
Absolutely.
No, but I mean, yeah, at the time, like, she was known primarily for, like not great, I mean, movies that I like, but they're not good, rom-coms.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, it's like, you know, and then at the end, you have two options, live or die, which is, like, said multiple times, and so it's like, I think it's, like, a streamlined story.
Yeah, I think the simplicity is really what makes it, but then, I mean, you know, it's that twist, and I like what, you hit the nail on the head, Greg, when you mentioned, like, that experience of, like, a shared experience, and that's very much what this was. Like, this was the start of a new trend in horror, and seeing that opening weekend with a crowd of like-minded horror fans, whether they like the movie or not, It's just a memory you're not going to shake because it's going to stay with you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And I feel like it's the kind of thing that we're all hoping to get maybe this weekend. Well, those of us who can go to the theater, but Americans who are vaccinated, off you go to the theater and maybe you'll have a similar kind of experience.
I will legit be seeing this movie about 6 hours after this episode drops. Well, no, not 6 hours, like 18 hours, but still.
Yeah, I get my second shot on the 15th and I wouldn't go into a theater till, what, 2 weeks after, I think is when you're
good. Yeah, 2 weeks.
So hopefully it's still in theaters. I'm gonna assume it will be.
Yeah, you'll be fine. Well, okay. Well, Greg, thank you for coming by to help talk a little bit of Saw with us to kind of wet our listeners' appetites for Spiral and our Saw episode next week.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, and also for doing, you know, Sawviver every week.
Oh, right. Sorry, everyone. Greg coined the term for our group, Sawvivers, which I swear to God, how long did we try to spend coming up with a name for ourselves?
So long. Because we were trying to get people to watch along with us. So we actually had like a social media design each week as well.
Yep. Yeah.
Then we said, fuck that. Let's just do it ourselves.
Yeah, we don't need groups. We just need a few.
I don't need groups. I need fans. Wait, what? Wrong franchise. Sorry.
Oh my God. Wait for January, Joe.
Got it. Got it. Mr. Greg, where can people find you if they want to follow you and all of your baking-related saw shenanigans?
Oh, your butt pictures.
Well,
my God, it was one.
It was one ass. God. You can follow Lone Wolf Bread Co. on Instagram, and that's my bread delivery service that I do up here in Providence. If they want to find me, Real Brew on Twitter, R-E-E-L, and I have very old writings at some websites that people can find in my profile that I will not air now because I just feel very shameful.
My God.
It's okay. I'll do better.
It's okay. Well, all right, everyone. So this has been a primer for our episode on Saw next week. If you are going to go see Spiral in theaters this weekend, please, of course, be safe. Wear your mask, even if you've been vaccinated, all that jazz, yada, yada, yada. And yeah, we can cross out whatever this is.
Yes, our Saw bonus-ode.
Bonus-ode. A boner-sode. Oh, my God.
You've made it to the end of another Bloody Disgusting podcast. Congratulations. If you like our programming, consider searching for other Bloody Disgusting podcasts, such as Creepy, Horror Queers, The Boo Crew, SCP Archives, Nightlight, Margaret's Garden, Nightmare on Film Street, and more.